Welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, coming at you across the web with the most exciting interviews and the best in Ohio State football and basketball coverage. Here's your host, Joe Dexter.
What is up, Buckeye Nation? Hello and welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. I'm Joe Dexter, as we've got a very special show for you. We're joined with Bill Connolly of SB Nation to talk about college football, its lore, and much more. His new book is out. Bill Connolly, one of the better writers in college football. Make sure you check out all of his work. And join us here today as we'll talk about Johnny Manziel, Braxton Miller, current situation in college football, and all of the hot topics as we get ready for the college football season. This is the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. More with Bill Connolly on the way when we come back. Giving back and serving first. That's the mission of the Driven Foundation. To impact the world one life at a time, starting with Central Ohio. Founded by former Ohio State Buckeyes Roy Hall and Antonio Smith, the Driven Foundation has helped provide multiple outreach events and motivational and fitness programs to families and youth throughout Central Ohio and surrounding cities. Rooted in Columbus, Driven is an Ohio nonprofit organization of versatility, mentoring in after-school fitness programs, motivational speaking, football camps, and children's hospital patient birthday parties are just a few vehicles in which Driven impacts Ohio children. Additionally, over the last 4 years, Driven has distributed approximately 300,000 pounds of free food to more than 3,700 plus families in the great state of Ohio. To find out more about the Driven Foundation, visit drivenfoundation.org. The Driven Foundation. Live to give. Give to live. Love doing both. BuckeyeRoom.com is your number one stop for Ohio State swag. From men's and ladies' apparel to hats, autographed apparel, and the best in scarlet and gray game day jerseys. BuckeyeRoom.com, featuring the deal of the day right on our homepage at thebuckeyebattlecry.com. BuckeyeRoom.com, the best place for Buckeye hats, clothing, and apparel. Welcome back to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. A very special guest this week as Bill Connolly of SB Nation joins us. The book is College Football, its stats and its stories. Bill, how's it going?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Can't complain. The college football season is almost here. Got to dig into your book, and man, it digs on what college football is about, and it's right in the title. It's stats and its stories.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a weird book in that it does kind of jump across a lot of topics, but that's just, I mean, that's the book I wanted to write. These are the things I enjoy talking about, and that's how it tied together is just simply, it's what I enjoy. So you get a lot of, you know, how you become a college football fan. You get a lot of stat discussion, hopefully not too much of the nitty-gritty because that wasn't the entire point. But yeah, it's just a discussion of the things that I love about college football, and hopefully others do too.
What inspired you to go from the web to the pages?
I don't really know. I think it was just as much as anything, just kind of a wanting to explore the stage, so to speak. It was just kind of a different experience. It requires a little more prep work than, you know, a lot of the writing I do. I do a lot of things that are based around templates and things like that, and I do a bunch of previews that are the same for one team to another. And this was a completely different format, and it just appealed to me to try to do it and see what it was like, and I really enjoyed it.
The book is College Football, its stats and its stories. Bill Connolly joining us here on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. First thing I took from the book after reading through it is the experiences you got not just writing the book but talking to the folks that you did.
Yeah, that was the fun part. I mean, the topics I covered, I've written a lot about it before, but I wanted to talk to people, to really smart football people, people I really respected, both in terms of writers and coaches and a couple former players and the numbers nerds out there. I wanted to get other people's opinions on it and discuss it with a lot of other people. And I think the whole thing in a lot of places comes off as a one giant conversation, which was kind of the idea. I figured, you know, even if you've read a lot of what I have written through the years, Bringing in a lot of interviews into the fold gives you a lot of original content and a reason to buy the book regardless. And then for beginners, so to speak, it offers a lot of different perspectives as well.
Well, let's start with the game of college football and I think you're trying to capture in the book. What's so special about the game of college football?
it's hard to explain. You get bitten by it, and it's just so weird. And so full of both, new traditions and old traditions and innovations and very, very, anti-innovations, so to speak. It's just such a weird, strange little experience that it's hard to explain to an outsider. You just have to, bring them to a game and let them experience it for themselves. That's one of the better quotes in the book came from Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated, just talking about how, when somebody comes to their first, Alabama LSU game or something, they didn't understand before, but they understand afterwards. There's so much history involved. Yes, the players matter. Yes, the current players matter, but the uniforms matter a lot too. And when you are playing Michigan in 2013, you want to win that game, but you're also trying to get revenge for all the teams that couldn't beat Michigan in years past. And I think that just there's so much backstory for every single school across the country. It's fun dipping your toes into different fan bases and kind of seeing what they see.
That's what it is, man. College football never dies.
Yeah, and it's year-round. I mean, that's every year becomes more year-round than before. And I mean, part of that is because for SB Nation, I write a season preview series. I do a piece about every team, and that means I have to start in, like, mid-February. So, I mean, basically a month after the season ends, I'm starting to talk about 2013. But, between recruiting and spring football and, arrests over the summer or conference realignment or whatever – there's always a discussion going on about college football, and I mean that's to a certain extent that's like that for every sport, but it's more extreme, I think, for football with all of its dates that just go through the calendar year.
It's Bill Connolly joining us. College football, its stats and its stories. The writer for SB Nation. You mentioned Michigan and Ohio State refighting those battles, and that's part of the lore of college football. My question is, when you look at where college football stands today and where fandom stands today with the likes of social media and the internet, is that lore continuing to grow, or is it growing in a different way? What are your views on that?
Well, I think what the internet has done and what Twitter and social media have done even more is it just everything good about being a fan is better and everything bad about being a fan is worse. I've met so many of my friends, my good friends, I tailgate with and everything else. I met them on, a Missouri message board or something like that a long time ago. And, it connects you to people, with like minds. And, that can be a good thing and bad because, number one, you do make connections that could be a lot stronger than just, somebody you randomly met in the dorm and hung out with because you didn't know anybody else. But, it connects you to players, and you're not very far away from having reasonably decent access to just about any player you want at this point, and that can certainly backfire. It's seeing all the fans yelling at recruits and yelling at the star quarterback after a bad game, that's certainly the downside. But I think I like to think that overall it's a net gain having the internet so pervasive these days. It got me a job, so I'm going to like it for sure.
That's the one thing that's interesting about it too. It might not necessarily increase the lore of college football. I think that going to a game and knowing the fans just by going to the game instead of outside of it maybe added to that lore, but it definitely adds to the stories.
Well, and with a site like SB Nation, I've really enjoyed getting to know the people involved there, but we are mostly fans first. And being involved with SBN has allowed me to. It's allowed me to understand a lot more fan bases. But then there's just you can obsess over college football just obsessing over your team. Obviously, there's recruit. Like we said, there's recruiting and spring football and every single game and everything else. You can be very centered on your team, but if you do that, your happiness is completely and totally dictated by how your team's doing. I'm a Missouri fan, and last year wasn't a lot of fun, but I really, looking back on 2012 as a whole, I really enjoyed it because college football was so much fun. And it allows you to kind of expand your horizons a little bit, and in that sense, the internet has certainly helped out.
One thing the internet has done, too, is Bill Connolly joining us. The College Football, Its Stats, and Its Stories book is out. The one thing that it does add, too, is some of the storylines in the offseason. We talked about the arrest and all those good things, but ESPN becoming the Johnny Manziel radio network, things like that. That's expanded college football. Is that good for the game, or is that something that's maybe hindering the game?
I mean, I guess headlines are good, but, you know, the TMZ-ification, I guess, of college football certainly isn't very appealing. It makes personalities more widespread. It makes the game more widespread, I guess. But, yeah, there's not a lot of fun about it. I haven't really... the preview series actually does me some favors because I'm focusing on things other than, you know, where Johnny Manziel went to eat that day. And that makes me pretty happy.
Johnny Manziel, it was an interesting story this offseason. The one thing that I take from it is... when you look at the outside of the game, the influence of what's going on out there has definitely played a role. How much is that part of college football that people don't really necessarily recognize?
Well, I mean, there are always, you know, the off season is always full of kind of not so positive stories. And I think, you know, Johnny Manziel in specifically has really, really made that something. I don't know if it's that he's young or if that he's outspoken or that he doesn't act like a Heisman winner is supposed to act or whatever, but he is tapped into something, and he's, for better or for worse, and really probably worse, he has really kind of, you know, he's been a magnet for a lot of coverage that, you know, yes, it's college football. Yes, it's part of college football. Yes, you know, Tim Tebow probably got pretty close to the same thing. So it's not new, but it's not fun. It's certainly not something I enjoy covering as much as actual developments about, you know, on the field and the product that we're going to see this fall.
It's definitely an interesting part of the game. As Bill Connolly joins us, the book is College Football, Its Stats and Its Stories, a writer for SB Nation. It's interesting as a fan and a writer when you look at it, but Ohio State website, we are the BuckeyeBattleCry.com. I don't think we had much fun writing about the Jim Tressel saga or Carlos Hyde, but in a way it adds some intrigue to the story of college football.
Well, certainly. I mean, it's, you know, these guys are people, and, you know, they're going to make a lot of mistakes because people tend to do that. So, you know, the bigger your fan base, the better you are, or the more successful you are, the bigger your spotlight's going to be. So if something happens, it's going to you're not going to be able to escape it. But yeah, I mean, when you're dealing with you know, coaches under a lot of pressure, when you're dealing with 19 to 22 year olds, you're going to have a lot of stupid stories too. That's just there's certainly no getting around that.
One of my favorite parts of the book is the first chapter. You talk about some of the top games. Everybody has top games when you're talking about college football fans that got them into college football. What are some of your top games?
Well, my list was kind of a combination of well-known events and very much less well-known events. I think it was just, I tried to focus not on the greatest games I've been to or the best wins or worst losses or whatever, but it's the things that really just hit a nerve with me, the things that connected me most to college football or made me appreciate college football more. So, you know, within that, you know, I mean, the first game I really remember much of is the Doug Flutie game, of course. You know, I was 6 years old when he completed the Hail Mary, so of course that had an impact. It had an impact on every single six-year-old in 1984. I mean, that game was right at the top of my list. That kind of created this kind of mythology, this fancy air of college football and how crazy it can be, and that certainly helped. You know, some of the early games, the 86 Orange Bowl, I lived in Oklahoma, so obviously Oklahoma winning the national title was a pretty big deal. You know, Penn State and Miami, of course. But then, you know, there's a kind of a gap in the list until you get to college age. And I was a freshman in 97 in Missouri when, you know, Ohio State, when Corby Jones still probably has an imprint of Katsumori's face mask on his hand. But later that year, of course, the flea kicker game between Nebraska and Missouri happened. And that was big. The getting revenge a few years later was big. Missouri going to number one in 2007 was big. My favorite game on that list, though, it's kind of a catch-all game. The last one I mentioned was the New Orleans Bowl in 2011. which was, I mean, it was a fun college football game, but it was not, you know, people didn't have a reason to be watching it, but if they did, they saw the part of college football, I think, that gets overlooked sometimes. We always complain about bowls. We always complain about, you know, there are too many of them, they don't matter, blah, blah, blah. Anybody who watched the New Orleans Bowl and watched Louisiana Lafayette versus San Diego State, that was Louisiana's Super Bowl. That was the most important game in their history, and they acted like it. They were ridiculously psyched up. There were a ton of Cajun fans in the Superdome. They made a stupid knuckling 50-yard field goal at the end that somehow went through, and they celebrated like they had won the national title. And there's that. Like I said, the fan bases in college football, the we all care about so many things that outsiders just don't even, that have never heard of. We all have our list of famous players and famous plays and games and all that. And, you know, if you're Notre Dame or Ohio State or Oklahoma or whatever, maybe the national audience knows about a lot of those games. But if you're Louisiana Lafayette, that, you know, you are in your own little bubble. And you're so passionate within that bubble, but people outside maybe don't know about it. And so writing about college football, that's something I've always tried to keep in mind, is that every fan base, every team you're writing about has a fan base that is passionate beyond what you know. And that game was a perfect example of that.
Man, that's the beauty of college football. Bill Connolly joining us, college football at Stats. And its stories, going back to that Nebraska-Missouri game, man, that's the first game to me, I'm a little bit younger than you, that's the first game I remember that just clicks as, man, I love this sport. And the thing that sticks out to me about it is a lot of these games, as you already mentioned a bit about, has some of these teams that you wouldn't expect being in these big games of college football history.
Yeah, the 97 Nebraska game was funny because there's a story. I don't know if it's true. I was in the stands. I wasn't listening or whatever. But there's a story that, you know, Brent Musburger during a commercial break runs to the restroom and just, he's almost late getting back to the booth because he's just, everybody he passes, can you believe this game? This is unbelievable. And you know, and first of all, having guys like Musburger who have their flaws but are just so enthusiastic and so happy to be a part of so many big games, I think that helps. There's just this, you know, it helps to have those figures instead of the Billy Packers who almost seem to hate the sport they're covering sometimes. That Nebraska game was, it was everything interesting about college football at once. Be it, you know, number one, you had a dynasty going on. That Nebraska team was ridiculously good, and it wasn't even the best one of that era. The 95 team was even better. But then you had the upset story. You had the craziness of the end. You had 25, I mean, at that point, what was it, 19, I think, years in a row that Missouri had lost to Nebraska. And the fans, you know, never mind that it was a number one team, the fans were dying to rush the field just so they could end that streak. And they had to wait another 6 years to do it after that. But, I mean, that was that was a game. There are so many, that was 16 years ago almost, and I remember, I'm not going to say every play, but I remember most of the plays from that game, and I remember them from the perspective of the field. It burns, a game like that burns into your memory quite a bit.
I think one of the things that's important about college football is those people that are important to it, like Musburger. In this section of the book where you talk about your top games, there's a footnote where you mentioned Beano Cook, one of the best in college football when it came to loving the sport. And you asked him about his list, and he said, well, it's your list.
Yeah, he was. I just kind of called him out of the blue. I got his number from somebody at ESPN, and you know, he was kind of guarded at first, didn't know who the heck I was. But we ended up having a series of two or three or four conversations now, at least three, I think, about the book. I did a podcast with him about the list. I mean, and this was in, I guess, 2010 or 11, and I mean, he was great. He was Beano Cook, and I love that. Maybe in college football more than other sports, but maybe not. Just, I love it when a genuine person gets to television or gets to your consciousness, because it's so easy to just put pretty people on the screen and say very generic things. And obviously, we deal with that a lot in college football coverage, just like every other sport. It doesn't matter what they're saying. We just want to, they just have to look good on camera, and they'll get pretty far. With Beano, he didn't look good on camera. But he was willing to do silly things, and he was willing to just be himself, and that was enough. And You know, he drove me crazy so often talking about, you know, teams I didn't like or talking about Missouri or whatever. He was a very polarizing figure, but he was incredibly genuine. And I got to learn that by talking to him on the phone. There weren't any cameras. There wasn't a podcast, or it wasn't until the third call, I guess. But that was the way he was at all times of day. He was very passionate about this silly little sport. And, you know, personalities like that are missed.
Bill Connolly joining us. The book is College Football, Its Stats and Its Stories. Bill writes for SB Nation. And Bill, talking about characters and experiences writing with college football writers, what's it like to write with the staff you have at SB Nation?
It's been a lot of fun. A couple times a year we meet. We have meetings in wherever, D.C. or Atlanta or somewhere, to talk about the plan for the coming months. But really, it's a nice chance to hang out and remind yourself how much you like your coworkers. It's a really fun team. I think as a whole, we try to do a good job of what the SB Nation catchphrase is, and that's, you know, fan perspective. Done very professionally. That's the idea. And, you know, we are all fans first, but I think we're all pretty good at our jobs, and we try to be even better at our jobs. And, you know, the collection of personalities is really diverse and interesting. We're kind of SEC-centric, but that's the way the dice were rolled. And it's a really good team. I think we cover things well, and lots of personality coming in out in a lot of different ways.
Bill Connolly joining us. The book is College Football, Its Stats and Its Stories. Check it out. A great book, as it takes a look at almost everything in college football, even some history in the book. And talking about money in college football, that always seems to be the dark side of things when it comes to college football. And some of the things that I found interesting and made me think, maybe I'm just jumping the gun here about the money. When you look at football teams running athletic budgets, as you had in the book, it goes all the way back to the 40s.
Yeah, this isn't, I mean, I think a lot of the conversations we've had have kind of grown to a certain degree. You know, the paying players argument is pretty big right now, and I think that's because of the money involved and how much it's growing exponentially. But yeah, my point in the book was that even in the 1940s, football was paying the budgets. Like Missouri, for almost every year in the 40s, the Don Faroe, the head coach and athletic director at the time, agreed to start the season at Ohio State just so that, you know, just for the payoff, basically. And, you know, some of those years they were really competitive, some years they weren't, but they got to pay off their debts, they paid off their athletic department for the rest of the year so they could go on and focus on everything else. And that's, so football's always been a big money thing. I think the Michael Oriard quote in there about, you know, when schools realized they could pay for admission to football games, everything was in trouble. It's always been a draw. It's so funny that this is such an American thing that nobody else really understands or cares about understanding football. But America has been drawn to the sport for a very, very, very long time. And obviously baseball was number one for the most of the first half of the 20th century. But football caught it a long time ago, and it's always been very, very high on the list. And it has some good purposes. Like I said, you know, in the book, the Flutie effect, so to speak, of, you know, it does build morale and it does serve a positive role in just college life. The thing, of course, is that when it's not serving a positive role, when you're maybe losing or maybe, you know, when there's a recruit out there who's really good and can help you win and build morale, you kind of sometimes get desperate and you're willing to do some very, very untoward things to make sure you're staying on top. And obviously, you know, everything in life has a downside to the upside, and that's what it is with college football. Because it can build morale and be so important, we do some stupid things sometimes.
Here's a pretty general question for you. 1940s, if this is football is running athletic budgets and help paying those off, where have we gone from there to now where football players believe they should be paid?
Well, beginning in the 1950s, that was when the whole student-athlete term was coined, and they kind of created the modern version of the college scholarships and stipends and whatnot. That was a big step, but, you know, since then, I think the only thing that has changed is money. You can pretty easily go back and search through old columns from the 50s and 60s and people talking about that these kids should be paid more than they are, and that the idea of scholarships and the idea of student athletes was just to avoid workman's comp and all that. All those ideas have existed for 50, 60 years, but because of the television contracts, because of all of that, it's grown to the point where a lot more people are throwing up their hands and saying, okay, seriously, if you're making this much money, and it basically, because you're nonprofit, it pretty much has to go to weight rooms or the coach's salary or the assistants, or as I think Oriard pointed out, the presidents of the schools, so that it doesn't look bad that they're making less than their coaches. All these people are they basically have no choice but to pay them more because the money has to go somewhere. And if that's the case, then yeah, at the very least, I really struggle with the idea of anything more than this. But at the very least, a cost of attendance thing. Make sure that they're not losing money. Make sure they're at least making a little bit. A cost of attendance of whatever it would be, $2,000 or $3,000 a semester or a year. I don't see why we couldn't do that. I realize that runs the risk of pricing out smaller sports. If we were to do that for football players, then maybe they have to cut the women's soccer team to pay for it, and that's a downside, because the women's soccer team, chances are the members of that team really appreciate the opportunity they have and aren't asking for more. There's a downside to that, or maybe, a Louisiana Lafayette-type program just drops down to FCS altogether or something. I would hate that, because I love writing about those teams. But I understand that with the way the stakes are, I don't know if there's a choice. I think, if the alternatives are building yet another weight room, or at the very least putting money into an account that can go to the players after they graduate, something like that should probably be looked into, and it is. And I think it's probably inevitable at some point here.
One thing that we've talked about on the website is in payment form of, if you graduate from the football program, maybe offering a chance to get a doctorate, or getting a chance to move on to a master's degree.
Yeah, I mean, something like that. I don't think you just have to pay them. I don't think you just have to write them a check. I think there are a lot of ways to incentivize the student-athlete experience. That's a terrible way of putting it, I think. But the idea that, if we want to make sure that education still matters here, then, then take this extra money and apply it in some way to making sure that they get a good education, and to make sure that they will continue to get, or that they could continue to get an education, a master's degree or whatever it is. I just think that, we can do this in a lot of different ways, but at some point we're going to be putting more money towards the student athletes, because you just don't need another weight room.
Bill Connolly joining us. The book is College Football, Its Stats and Its Stories. We've talked about paying players. The other hot topics in college football include realignment. Is it ruining college football?
Well, I mean, as a team, as a fan of a team that benefited significantly from realignment, well, actually, I mean, I don't know, it definitely benefited, but I mean, I got to see both sides of it. I got to see the, oh, God, we're going to end up in the Mountain West side, and I got to see the, hooray, we drew the, we won the lottery, we're in a good place now side. And, I think as a whole, it alone isn't bad. I mean, it's just not. But some of the side effects could be, just in terms of, a lot of the reason these conferences are becoming bigger is for money, and, the television money and all that. And so, again, if the money's going to the wrong places eventually, if we are, building these bigger conferences with more money involved just so, Michigan can build yet another, an even bigger, more impressive rowing facility, then, yeah, that is a problem. But the simple act of teams changing conferences or looking out for their own bottom line, I don't necessarily have a problem with that, even if I should.
One of the interesting moves for me, since we cover the Big Ten, has been the Big Ten realignment with Maryland and Rutgers. A lot of talk has been that when the Big Ten adds a team, it's academic-wise that they're interested in first and foremost. But when you got a conference making $25 million from the Big Ten network and you add two of the top markets in the country, that comes to a different story to me.
Well, I think the Maryland and Rutgers moves. Now, I mean, first of all, Rutgers has been pretty decent at football relatively recently, and Maryland hasn't always been what they were last year. They don't play a fifth-string quarterback every single year. So they've both had a decent amount of success in the last year, so I think we've overstated a little bit the whole, they're terrible at football, so this was clearly about money. But with Maryland and Rutgers more than anybody else, The terms like market have come into play, and it really has seemed like, the first motivation was getting the Big Ten Network in bigger markets and with smaller fees in the window, so to speak. And that's certainly not what you want. Maryland, and if you're just looking at football prowess, and if the Big Ten was looking to extend and stay sort of regionally sound, so not looking at Texas or Georgia Tech or whatever, Rutgers and Maryland were two of potentially the better options available. It was just the verbiage from the start was more about markets than it was about the football teams themselves. And I think, that was kind of a sour thing. It didn't taste right as we were experiencing that.
I think what us fans do is paint ourselves in a corner, too, of thinking that that's the only reason. How much plays in the factor of the rivalries, the lower side of things, when you add two teams on the east side that can compete with the Penn State and maybe create a rivalry? How much does that play into the realignment for the Big Ten?
Well, it doesn't hurt. I mean, the Missouri and Arkansas is a good example, just because, Missouri and Arkansas have never been conference mates. But, because they were geographically close, they have played a lot in the past, especially in basketball. And, even with, Doriel Green Beckham's recruitment a couple of years ago, they've Missouri fans and Arkansas fans have battled many times on the internet, and have grown to dislike each other a decent amount. And that, because of geography, basically, that was already sort of a budding rivalry. And, when Missouri made the move to the SEC, that could only further things in that regard. There could be a nice, healthy hatred pretty quickly there. And so, yeah, geography still has a role to play in that. And I think if you're not going to add Pitt, which obviously the Big Ten's not, then bringing in a couple of Eastern schools could only help when it comes to Penn State. And, then the other side of the rivalry is just playing important games. So if Rutgers and Maryland, go about their business and produce pretty good squads and play in pretty important games, then it'll feel like a decent move. It's just, in the meantime, all we have is television dollars to talk about, and that's that just isn't fun.
Bill Connolly joining us here on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. The book is College Football, its stats and its stories. A couple more quick hits before we let you go. Bill, who's your favorite coach to write about?
Todd Berry, Louisiana Monroe. We've had a lot of fun at SBN. We focused a lot on, Maction and a lot of those weeknight games that we're all watching, because what else are we going to watch? Todd Berry is, I discovered this a couple of years ago when I was writing about Louisiana Monroe, and last year's success built off of that, obviously, with beating Arkansas, almost beating Baylor and all that. But I'm not sure there's another coach who has gone to an underdog school and basically, without using the word underdog, because everybody you hate that if you're at that school, but he has basically freely accepted that you're not going to just beat other teams by out-talenting them. You have to figure out ways to beat them. You have to think hard about your tactics. You have to experiment. They broke out the two quarterback formation last year against Baylor, and it was fun being on Twitter at that point, because you immediately knew everybody who was watching that game, because everybody erupted because it was just so neat to see that experimentation. He runs a 3-3-5 defense. He has openly admitted, we can't win doing things traditionally. We have to figure out other ways, and they did that. They went to a bowl last year for the first time. And they should have a really, really good experienced team that could, scare the heck out of somebody like Oklahoma or somebody else on their schedule. I think they should probably be favored against Wake Forest, actually. And he's done that at a school that never won anything, at least at this level. And I love talking about those types of stories. In terms of major conferences, it is kind of funny because, the higher up you get, the more boring you are, almost. Urban Meyer, he'll give some good quotes every now and then. And he runs a pretty fun little spread offense. At least, it's been neutered a little bit from the Bowling Green days. But, Nick Saban, what else are you going to say about him exactly that hasn't already been said? So we end up, I enjoy talking about the smaller schools and the smaller name coaches who aren't big names yet anyway, a lot more than anybody else, it seems.
Your most memorable game, is it the 97 game?
Probably. I mean, the 97 and then the 2003 game where Missouri and Nebraska, where Missouri finally got a revenge on Nebraska with a big fourth quarter. I think those two memories are really, really tied together. But obviously then as well, the Missouri-Kansas game in 2007 where the winner's number one in the BCS standings, that was big, obviously. When you're not at an Ohio State-level school, the chance to get your quarterback on the front page of sport, on the cover of Sports Illustrated, because you're number one in the country is a pretty big deal.
Do you have a favorite player that you're looking forward to cover this year?
This year, I learned a lot about, through the years, I really love the breakaway receivers. That seems to be my favorite position. So a guy like Marquise Lee, I love watching those guys glide downfield. And I think, I'm a little concerned about Lee. I'm not sure if he has a quarterback who's going to be, I thought Matt Barkley was a little overrated, but he's at least good enough to get Lee the ball downfield. And while I have no love for USC, I really hope Lee is able to do fun things because I really, really enjoy watching those types of players.
Is Braxton Miller going to be a quarterback that you think can get in the Heisman talks?
Well, it sounds like, he's certainly in the talks already. As I think this year is kind of funny because we're going to have Manziel, well, unless he's suspended, I guess. We're going to have Clowney, and then we're going to have a third guy, whoever that would be. Whether it's, I think Braxton Miller is the most likely guy there. I think somebody like Lake Seastrunk at Baylor could, if Baylor gets back up to the 10-win range, he could have enough breakaway runs to really get into that conversation. But, yeah, Braxton Miller, because of his running ability, I think, in terms of open field running, he can't dance around backwards like a chicken with the head cut off like Manziel, but he's just a beautiful runner to watch. And, I think his passing is going to have to improve. Well, not even the passing, it's getting the pass off, taking fewer sacks, putting Ohio State in less, in fewer uncomfortable situations is going to be key because they did. I mean, the Buckeyes are going to be really good this year, but they got a little lucky last year. And, they won a lot of close games. And in a lot of cases, because the offense was in pretty inconvenient situations, their margin for error was really small. And if they rely on that again this year, it's going to hurt them quite a bit. So, if the passing game can improve a little bit or just enough to take attention off the run and build some space against lesser teams, don't let Purdue almost beat you. if he can improve just a little bit in that aspect, he's going to be a very, very tough quarterback to beat in the Heisman race.
Finally, Bill, before we let you go, what would be the perfect ending to the quote-unquote BCS era this season when it comes to the national championship game?
Well, it depends on your definition of perfect, I guess. If we're talking about the perfect way to cynically cap off this 15 years of so many inconvenient situations, then, having undefeated Alabama, undefeated Ohio State, undefeated Texas, and undefeated, Oregon at the end of the year would certainly be a nice way to remind ourselves of why we moved to a four-team playoff. I don't want any more controversy, though. I hope that this last year, before we move to four teams, the top two teams, are whoever they may be, are very, very obvious, and we can just kind of move on with our lives.
Bill Connolly, the book is College Football, Its Stats, and Its Stories. Find his work at SB Nation. Bill, thanks for your time. Enjoy the college football season. We'll talk to you down the line.
All right, thanks for having me.
Again, the book is Study Hall, College Football, Its Stats, and Its Stories. Bill Connolly, the author of SB Nation. Find his great work all across SB Nation and follow him on Twitter at @SBN_BillC. Thanks to Bill for getting us ready for the college football season and giving us a look at his great book as we're ready for the football season. We're going to talk more in depth next week about Ohio State as the gang here at the Buckeye Battle Cry will break down what's to come for the upcoming season and what we expect. And we'll break down the Buffalo Bulls, our first opponent of the 2013 season. That'll do it for the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Have a great week.
For more on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, visit iTunes or check out our media page. For more Buckeye news and notes, visit www.thebuckeyebattlecry.com.